Welcome to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. Thanks for joining us on our ongoing culinary exploration of the beautiful Comox Valley.
All right. Well, we're back here in studio again, Darren.
Yeah, well, here we are.
And it's great. And we've got Don McCrae here from Custom Gourmet Catering.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
So we're going to just sort of, we want to just sit down and have a nice chat with you and sort of talk a little bit about what you're doing, your business, and just catering in general.
Sounds good.
We can just fill in the public about what's going on in the world of catering and what's going on in your world. So, So how did you get into catering?
I kind of defaulted into catering. I was living in Vancouver working in restaurants, and I was just kind of tired of the 16-hour days and only getting paid for 12 of them and working for accountants who don't know a lot about the food industry.
Right.
So when I moved back to the Valley, I moved over just to be closer to family. And for me, it was just more ideal to get in to start my own catering company than it was to go work at some of the restaurants that are available at that time. And we're looking, you know, 10, 11 years ago sort of thing.
Right.
So pickings were a bit slimmer.
Into the same situation too, going back into the long hours.
Totally. And I'm getting older, you know, for those who don't know me. Like, there's only so much you can do line cooking for 16-hour days without, you know, crashing and burning at the end of the day. So at least catering for 16-hour days isn't so bad.
It's at your own pace.
It is. Yeah, for sure. And the face of your clients, but
yeah.
They still need to eat, but yeah, no, it's fun.
Cool. And so that's basically how you got going here in town. Is just
more or less. I started actually with a community futures program back in the day. So when I got laid off from Vancouver, moved over, it seemed perfect. Took the summer off, which is the first summer off I've had in eons. For those who know this industry, it doesn't happen very often. I think I get a week in the summer. I'm like, woohoo, you know, but, so it just seemed like a really viable place to do it. And I like calling my own shots with a catering company too. And every event is so different than the one before. Every client is so different.
Right.
Where you're in the restaurant, you're making the same salad 15, 20 times a night. And it has to be the exact same salad. Well, with catering, I'm making the same salad completely different every time for every client. Because one doesn't want, you know, cilantro, one doesn't want garlic. So it's always a different game. And
yeah, it's fantastic. It's fun. Always something new.
Yeah. With personal chefing too, we get to go into some really cool houses.
Yeah.
So we don't have the commercial kitchen to work out of, where most people do. We actually go into people's homes. So we get to go into some amazing places.
Wow.
And, you know, we get to go to the penthouses of hotels, and we get to go to conference centers and beachfront, you know, villas. Like, it's really interesting where we get taken to. So it's fun.
Sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad way to see the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Or see the town, anyways.
A different approach on the food industry. I mean, John and I come from, obviously, restaurant backgrounds.
Right.
I've done a tiny bit. I'm just starting to do a little bit of, I would guess you would consider it catering, but not on the scale that you're talking about. And haven't really explored that whole venue, that whole side of it.
It's a lot of work doing it in people's homes and going into different venues and that not having the kitchen. But at the end of the day, I think we look back on it and we smile probably a little bit more than if we were in a windowless box room with stainless steel around us all the time. So it's a little bit nicer, you know. Can't complain.
So let's talk about some of the aspects of your business. So you do catering events. Like, what size catering events do you do?
We do everything from small little intimate dinners for two all the way up to 350, give or take. We've done receptions up to above 500. Wow. So that's probably our max at this moment. But that could change tomorrow. Depends what phone calls I get when I get home.
Right.
It's all different. We've done everything from 5-6 course plated dinners for 350 all the way up to family style, down to simple buffets, to the whole kind of gamut. I guess we do everything food related. We don't jump out of cakes, but that's, you know, that's the only food thing we don't do yet. But I think we kind of do the whole thing from big functions to, we even do meals in people's homes, put in the freezer.
Wow.
So when they're expecting a baby or something like that, we can do that for them as well. So
nice. Do that custom design stuff for people.
Yeah. So then they have 20 meals and it helps their husband out. Usually it's a husband who needs it more than the wife, I find. But we do that. And cooking class is the other one that we're also like doing. So we go to people's homes and, you know, 8 or 9 friends and a couple of bottles of wine, and we do a little cooking class for them. So it's a fun evening.
So you say you must have a staff that fluctuates in size. You're saying you do smaller parties and then up to 350.
Yeah, like a dinner for two, I can usually pull off my own.
Right.
And, you know, 350, you need a few friends.
Yeah.
So we end up, for that one, we had 26 staff out.
Wow.
So we end up calling out people that, you know, we've put on Facebook a lot of times, friends, families, second cousins, dogs, neighbors, anything, just people. Right. So it does fluctuate. We probably have about 20 people on call right now.
Wow.
And about 4 or 5 people that I keep steady. And then I have a sous chef who works beside me most times.
Wow.
Which is quite nice. So
you find that you're getting a lot of business. It's a lot of, like, you're well established enough that you're getting continual business.
It's been keeping me busy and paying my mortgage and all my bills for about, 10 years now that I've been doing this.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we're coming up to just over 9.5 years now. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun still. So
yeah,
I guess that's the key, right? If you like what you do, then
yeah,
everything else will kind of happen. So
yeah, no, yeah. My only encounters with it so far have been with catering is I have a few friends that have their own catering businesses, and including my brother, and everybody's just sort of on the sort of beginnings of it all, and they're still scraping together pennies, and they're still, you know, trying to get that extra contract just to pay for, to cover the overhead, and
yeah,
and so all I know of it is quite a struggle, but obviously you're established enough that you're past the sort of initial struggle.
Yes, I'm past the initial struggle, yeah. But it's always a struggle. Yeah. I always say, and it's now I don't worry when I have a downtime or I have a slow time. I don't worry because I know there's more coming around the corner.
Right.
Where the first 3 or 4 years I was stressing out because I'm like, oh my God, there's no business. We need anything.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh great, it's slow. I'm sleeping. This is awesome. You know, yeah. I can take a week off and play when I need to and all that kind of fun stuff.
And that's nice.
But yeah. I think probably about 4 years ago, I thought I have all the equipment I ever need. I'm never going to buy any more equipment. It never stops. You're still scraping towards pennies to buy that extra stock pot
right.
and that extra coffee yeah. urn and all that stuff. And that just keeps,
yeah,
you keep building.
Growing, right?
Totally, yeah. And you need all that equipment to grow. I mean,
yeah.
you can't cook soup for 350 with two stock pots. It just
doesn't happen. No,
really,
I know.
Doesn't
I ran
happen.
Into something similar just a little while ago. Did not have, I was cooking pasta for 200 kids and...
In a house cooking pot, a 7 liter.
I had yeah. like three pots. Like, oh no, this is going to take all day.
Yeah.
And it did.
Yeah, it's worth that $85 pot.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I'd like to bring up is just some of the challenges of catering, because I know I've done a fair bit myself, and I know it's a bit of a different world than working in a restaurant, because a restaurant, you have everything there and everyone comes to you, whereas mm-hmm. catering is a whole, you're going out there to people. So what are some of those challenges you find?
We always joke that my life is a mislabeled tote, because everything has to be in a tote properly
right.
put away. And I find that when staff don't put things away properly, it can be a really pain. You get to a site and you're like, where's my knives?
Right.
You know, it could be that simple that somebody put it in another tote not thinking. So we basically are well organized in the sense that we have, you know, 4 or 5 main totes that come with us constantly, no matter what the job, no matter how big, how small. And then we have the 10 other totes that fluctuate with every event that we have to pack and repack and unpack
right.
for every job. And that's probably the most strenuous part. I hate packing. So now I drive home with my van, I park at the driveway, and my sous chef unpacks it. It's brilliant.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've noticed that even some of the events that you've done with the Chefs Association, because you
right.
are a major member and on the executive of the association.
Mm-hmm.
You're always the one that pulls up with the totes when we're doing stuff, and you're like, you're the one who remembers the sugar and the salt and the pepper.
Well, when you get on site and you don't have salt.
Yeah.
You got to find something, right? So we rely a lot on what can we do instead. You know, I've showed up at an event and we forgot the protein. It's like, okay, I can't fake this one. You know, most things I can fake, so you have to run back out and get it. I mean, we're only human, right? So it can be a bit challenging sometimes to learn how to manipulate what you have to make sure the client gets what they need
right.
at the same time. So we have a lot of fudge room in a lot of things. If they just say a green salad, we can kind of play with a little bit while we go in it. But at the same time, if we get the greens, you're still kind of hooped, Tori. So
yeah.
Luckily,
yeah.
we have a lot of grocery stores in this town that are open late, so we're okay.
Now, that's an excellent question, is where do you get most of your product from? Are you...
We prefer to shop in the valley for that. So we go to Butcher Block for all of our meat. We go to Thrifty's for our seafood. And then we utilize a lot of stuff from Thrifty's Quality Foods and Superstore as well. We try not to bring too much stuff in from Konings and all that kind of stuff. We find it's just fresher. So right before the event, we'll be out shopping 2 hours before we arrive at people's homes so that we get the best of the best that day. And if we get there and we find that they want a zucchini and zucchini doesn't look very good, well, we won't buy it. We'll supplement something else and just explain that to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think the clients like that because they're not just getting what's been in our walk-in for, you know, 2 months kind of needing to go. So. They're getting it nice and fresh that day.
That is a key thing, just having fresh ingredients.
It is, yeah. And when the farmer's market's there, it's even way better. But
And being able to have your menu fluctuate like that, that it's not so rigid, that you do have some wiggle room in there that you can adjust.
Or seasonal vegetables really is seasonal vegetable. It's not a bag in the freezer called seasonal vegetable. You know, you know, it really is what's actually out there right now. And then that other people are getting or what looks really good. So
yeah, exactly. Which is, again, something that we sort of fight in the restaurant atmosphere where... Yeah, the same menu item is available all through the year, regardless of where it's being sourced.
It's funny how people want that.
Yeah.
You know, they want that asparagus all year. You're like, but it doesn't taste like asparagus. Why would you want it right now? You know, and it's just starting. Like, I think we've lost that whole seasonal aspect of cooking.
Right.
In a way, too. We just want what we want. We want it now, and that's the end of that story. And it's it's a shame in a way.
Yeah, that's my mango dilemma. I've always said that people always want mango.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you should only get mango for certain Yeah. Of the year.
And there's a window, and it may not be the same window every year. No. They don't get it. They're like, but I had it in February last year. Well, it's not February this year. Like,
yeah. I have the same discussion with my kids and blueberries. My kids absolutely love blueberries.
Yeah, and so do these guys. But
yeah. Yeah. And I've said we freeze some ourselves and use them for baking and cooking throughout the year. But other than that, I'm like, I refuse to buy blueberries, regardless where they come from. Even though there's some more or less local blueberries that are brought in, I'm like, we'll wait until they're in season, and then we'll really enjoy them. Then we can look forward to them the next year.
You don't want the blueberries that are the size of a golf ball and imported from, you know, Argentina or some crazy place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't even taste like blueberries.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, food's fun.
Yeah, that's great.
I like
great.
The medium
well,
of food.
Well, it's great that you use local. I mean, obviously, it's the shape of the way everything's gone, too. And I think that the world's just sort of caught up to the way that chefs have been seeing everything for a while, is that always source local if you can.
Yeah, it's a great trend. And I'm hoping that it's actually here to stay.
Same here.
Which I think it is. And it's, you know, there's a lot of contradiction going on with the farmers market and local and all that kind of stuff. Because everybody's like, let's go support our farmers. But then they're really encouraging the urban gardening part of it.
Right.
So it's like, oh, let's grow our own food, but let's support farmers. And it's, you know, it's a tough thing to do both. And it's you do need to both, because we still need the carbon footprint needs to be closer to home. But
absolutely.
I think we need to figure out how to balance all that so that everybody's happy at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. And it's still in its infancy. And again, not from a chef standpoint or the restaurateur's standpoint, but more of the public acceptance standpoint. I think the public at large is just sort of getting to figure all this out. And I think everything will eventually find a happy medium.
Yeah,
right. Right now, it's just an exciting time to see everybody excited about local vegetables again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we just need to encourage a few more people to pay the price of it.
And,
you know, keep our farmers going, because it's hard when you can buy asparagus for $2 here and it's $5 at the farmer's market. But I mean, this tastes like asparagus at the farmer's market. The stuff in the grocery store, it's like, cardboard painted green, yummy.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but people don't see the difference. Right. You know, when their catering bill comes in, it's twice as much. They're like, well, what just happened? Well, I can name the chicken if you want, like...
This exactly. Again.
Lot number 42 versus Charlie.
Exactly.
It's a different way of eating for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Actually, that just brings me up to something I know that you're quite involved with, is the Growing Chef program.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's starting in a couple weeks here, coming up again.
Can you tell us about that?
It's a program that started in Vancouver, and basically what the mandate of it was to educate. We work with grade threers mostly, so we go into the classroom, and it's done over about 8 sessions. So it's done over about a 3-month period, and we start off the first day teaching them how to grow things. So we actually plant seeds. So we'll plant beans, for instance. And then over the course of those times, we watch the beans grow.
Right.
And then at the end, we harvest the beans, we cook them, and we share them with the class.
So
that the kids can actually see that a bean doesn't come from a can. It doesn't come from Walmart. It actually comes from a plant that we can grow ourselves.
Wow.
And along the way, we teach them little bits about, you know, knife skills and cooking, of course.
Right.
And we talk about composting and just all that kind of into stuff to show them. And it's in Vancouver, I think it's more important, or, you know, as Jamie Oliver has proved in the States, that, you know, tomatoes don't. You know, come from here. They actually grow in the ground. And
They don't just show up magically in a little plastic container.
Totally, yeah, which is, you know, awesome. But so here, I mean, Cumberland, we're dealing with kids who are way more advanced than even me. I mean, one day we had to bring in your favorite vegetable. And 2 kids brought in fiddleheads. And one kid brought in kale chips. And then the rest brought, like, 1 carrot stick, 1 broccoli. But it was all such a diverse variety of vegetable sticks. It was just amazing. And different dips. Like, you're like, well, you know what half the stuff is. It was awesome.
Well, that's fantastic.
You know, and the kale chips were the most popular.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, but only in Cumberland, I think.
Well, no, so. that really speaks to me. I didn't realize that. I do, like I said, I do a little bit of catering, and I do mostly cooking for kids. And then I have a program or a contracts with a lot of the schools, local schools. I do a lot of the food. And and also I've always, since day one, which is what led me actually to sitting in this chair here with you right now, is I've always, since the birth of my children, involved them in everything that I do in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And my kids just love it. And I would love to continue on finding new paths of encouraging kids to get into the kitchen and get involved in their food. Definitely something.
Growing Chefs is always looking for volunteers.
Next year we'll talk to you. I will absolutely volunteer for that.
We'll bring you in as a guest speaker for this one or something like that.
No, that speaks to me completely. That's something I would love to do.
It's fun to watch kids and adults, like, their eyes light up when they learn something about their favorite ingredient, their favorite, you know, food or something, and they're just like, oh, that's how it's done. It's just such a neat little watching light bulbs go off.
Yeah.
You know, so neat. Or showing them something different, they're like, oh, I didn't know that.
You right.
know, it's cool.
I have every second week, I do one day every second week, I let my daughter make us dinner, and she's 8.
I was about to say. Sweet.
And yeah, and then, so yesterday, my son, who's 6, asked if he could have a turn. So my 6-year-old son made
borrow
dinner
your kids
night.
And they can teach our kids some couple things. Yeah. You know?
I mean, it's not from scratch. You know, we made some handmade meatballals or whatever last week, and so those were brought out. And, but yeah.
Yeah, we're starting to get these guys. We've got, you know, the 2 little ones as well. Yeah. And we're teaching them, like, we did the meatballs. We did the fresh pasta.
Right.
And
yeah.
So we're kind of showing them that and fresh bread and that kind of stuff, too.
Right.
And
yeah.
Just a little bit where it does. Exactly. It doesn't come out of a plastic bag.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's the little things that I think that takes them forward in life, though, too. And they can apply to other things as well. So.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Let's get more people on that bandwagon. Yeah. Much healthier, happier place.
Yeah. Great. But,
so I wouldn't mind. Let's go back a little bit. How did you get into cooking? How did that all evolve for you?
That was kind of a default, if anything. I grew up on Hornby Island, and when you're growing up there as a teenager, the only way to make extra money, well, there's a few different ways, but main ways, is the Hornby Island Co-op. So you go into retail or you go into restaurants. So there was a couple different, you know, the Rizo and all that kind of stuff. So my first job was actually working at the gas bar, and I hated pumping gas all summer. It was the worst. Right. So the second year I decided I'm going to try food. So I started working at Fry's with the coffee shop there.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just seemed to kind of take me along and, you know, it's like a little river sometimes when you get onto something like that.
Yeah.
I tried to get out of it. I guess when I was about 22, I went to college and I went and got my business management, my marketing, and I wanted to become an ad executive and graphic designer and design stuff. And I still would love to. I think it's my third career. I think we're working that way.
Yeah.
But then I tried to get a job, and it was such a boys club that I couldn't find a job to you know, pay my rent. So I just sort of defaulted back into a restaurant, and they offered me an apprenticeship, and you know, here I am.
I've done the same thing. Got a family restaurant when I was young, worked in restaurants all my life. And then, no matter how much I tried to get away from it, it just seemed to be a default. But instead of kicking and screaming back into the food industry this last time, I was like, I'm going to embrace it.
And
enjoy it. And I've had a completely different perspective on it ever since.
Mm-hmm. I think I was about 29, and I sat down with myself and wrote a big list. What do I want to do when I grow up? And where do I see my life going? And all that stuff. My life has just changed a little bit at that time. And I was, you know, more of a free woman at that point, and I had lots of options ahead of me.
Right.
And everything came down to food.
Yeah.
Everything on the page. And then I realized, okay, well, what can I do in this area of the world related to food? You know, I wanted to get into like test kitchens, and I'm like, but you're in Vancouver or Courtney. Right. It's not going to happen, you know? You know, it's like Chatelaine doesn't have a test kitchen here at Dawn. So then that's kind of where, I totally embrace it and love it. But I think it's just, for me, food is, you know, it's art in a way, but it's also just, it's a medium.
Yeah.
So it's what you can create with all those palettes of colors and flavors and putting it all together and creating and using my hands, my brain, and, you know, my body to do it. And I think it's just, it fills everything you need for a career.
I always like to say that a plate is just a picture frame.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, it is.
And you have that extra medium of flavor to combine with it.
So. And you and I, well, the three of us even, will create totally different dishes with the exact same ingredients. And that's just a very empowering thing.
That's one of those things I love too, is that it's just that everybody has their own approach.
It does, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's what makes it fun though.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to eat the same thing all the time.
No.
So what are some of your plans for the future here?
I've got a few pokers in the fire, if we can call it that. Right. But I think the nice thing, like I said, we've been doing the personal chefing and catering in people's homes and on venues and stuff for about 10 years now. So I think now it's time to, you know, step up to the plate, and we're going to start a commercial kitchen in the next couple of years. So we'll actually start, I've got a little spot in my home. We're going to convert it all over and just do a smaller one to start and then see where that goes.
But because that must be a bit of a challenge too, is having space to cook.
It is sometimes, events. Yeah. People's houses can be pretty small. I mean, a lot of the places we get into are, you know, quite large, which is great.
Yeah.
But we've learned to work in a 2x2 foot space, and that's your pivot. So don't leave it, you know?
Yeah.
So we've gotten pretty good at taking over people's kitchens and making it work for us. But I think just having a bigger space that we can actually call home.
Right.
And,
especially when you do a bigger event, like when you say you get up to your 300 to 400 or 500 people.
We end up spending 2 days at the Philburg is pretty much what it is, where most people will spend probably a week getting ready for that. We have 2 days. Let's get it done. Let's get it over with. Move on.
So
it's a little bit of a different approach for sure, but we like it. I think our clients appreciate it too. So
lots of totes.
Lots of totes, lots of coolers. And when I first started, I'm like, I'm a one cooler company. Woohoo! And then about 4 years later, I'm like, I've got 10 coolers. Look at me go. You know, it's like, it was like a sign of achievement suddenly.
Yeah.
But it'll be nice to get rid of some of those too.
I know I was stunned. I have my business, right now in Prontisma, my business sort of exists right. in there as well. We share the space.
Nice.
And I'm the same thing. I have two coolers. That's it. My cool. And
three will come.
And I thought, she just said, oh, you can put those with the other coolers. There's a storage area just for coolers. There's just to the ceiling of just coolers stacked. I was like, but you're just a small pasta company. And she's like, yeah, you wouldn't believe how many I use, like mm-hmm. how often I need that many coolers.
Yeah, we have storage or coolers everywhere, in storage down below on the side. Yeah, it's crazy. Cambros, you got to keep it fresh. So it's the only way to do it these days. But that nice packs.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
So I'd love to ask you, what do you love about the Comox Valley and being in this area?
Well, where do you start with that one? You know what? I think it's one of the most beautiful places that I know, and I haven't been around much. I mean, I always get hassled for that at home. My boyfriend's from Belgium, and he's, you know, traveled the world a little bit more than me, for sure. I grew up in the Valley, so I've gone as far as Vancouver, far over as Manitoba and down to Mexico, and that's my little boundary of where I know life. But, I mean, I drive along the Dyke Road, and it's just, it's beautiful. You know, with all the eagles, you look up the mountain, the first snow of the year, the ocean. I mean, I think we're in a perfect little scenario here. We've got wine over here. You know, we've got meat over there. We've got, you know, all the stuff around us. I mean, on all these, you know, different fruits and vegetables and cows and chickens. And we got everything.
We truly do. John and I talk about it all the time. Like, we're this perfect little convergence point where everything exists, everything. Yeah. You need it's sort of right there nearby.
Yeah, 100 mile. We just need a 50 mile. You know, even that we don't need. I mean, the stuff coming out of our oceans is, you know, if we can. That's a whole other podcast. We'll get to that later. But you know,
it's a series of podcasts, actually.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah, but just, you know, tapping into all that and utilizing it. And I think.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like the Valley. I mean, it is a Valley of Bounty. It really is.
Absolutely.
It really is. So.
That's great.
Yeah, we just need to grow coffee and we'll be.
And then we're fully self-sufficient.
So now if people need to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
We have a website that they can check out. Okay. So it's customgourmetchef.com. Okay. And they can also just call us at the office.
Yeah.
So we're usually there. Yeah.
And we'll put a link to that up for, on the website.
That'd be brilliant. Thank you.
People can go from there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for sitting in with us.
Thank you very much. This has been fun.
Yeah, great.
I was a little nervous, but no, you guys are good. You put me at ease. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to us at the Studio Live in Cumberland, BC. We graciously accept donations to help with the operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website at ediblevalley.com.
And like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your questions and comments at ediblevalley@gmail.com. We would love to hear your suggestions for guests or what you'd like to hear on our show. And don't hesitate to send John your cooking questions or pick our brains for local food information. Remember,
keep it local.